Hello and welcome to the Weekly Song Podcast, episode 166. This is season 18 of the podcast. This is Roger and this is Declan. Hello, Declan.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Yeah, we are back with our sixth episode. And for those of you who don't know what we do on the show, let me clue you in. Here we go with the cluing in. We write a song.
Get ready for your first clue.
You have to put these all together at the end of the show. No, I'm just kidding. I'll give it to you all in one go. So what we do is Declan and I, we each write a song in the space of a week, and we bring them to this show and we talk about how we wrote them. And we say nice things about each other's songs, and we get into the chords and the lyrics and how you get from a blank sheet of paper to a fully produced demo. Anyway, enough of that. How was your writing week for the song we're talking about this week, Declan?
It was very last minute. Did not get a good idea in time, but I do have a song, and it is what tis. That's all I can say. How about yourself? How did you find writing for week six?
It was very piecemeal. It was like, we'll get into a little bit later in detail, but it was like come up with one part and then, okay, that's a cool part, and then find some time a little later in the week to flesh that out a little bit more. And then the weekend was spent just adding lyrics and kind of finishing relatively last minute from what I remember. So, yeah.
So essentially what you've got here is one of us who has actually done the homework and actually worked on the project throughout the week, and one of us who realized that class was starts in 5 minutes and desperately had to rush everything just in the break before lesson starts.
It happens, but the
it does.
But the great thing is, two songs in a week. I mean, that is the icing on the pudding.
Indeed,
that's
two more songs than we had before.
That's not a saying, but anyway. Okay, so we're going to listen to your song first this week, Declan. Tell us, what's it called?
So this song is called, I think it's called "Kept Me Wrong." Let me just double check that because I definitely remember.
To be fair, behind the curtain, listeners, you already know this. This episode is a little delayed, so we're sorry about that. But so this is a song from a couple weeks back.
It is. Yes, it is definitely called "Kept Me Wrong," and it goes like this.
I haven't got the words. I need more time. Everything that I've heard, and yet I've no lines. I think I'm losing track of myself. Would this be easier were I someone else? I never wanted what I couldn't have. I only needed what I already had. I have been been all so very long. I kept it right, so why's it kept me wrong? I'm lost now every day. I need a guide. Tell me to run away and when to hide. I think I'm losing track. Said before, if I fold a single step, I won't take more. I never wanted what I couldn't have. I only needed what I already had. I have been coping all so very long. I kept it right, so why's it kept me wrong? I see in the shape of myself the emptiness of fortune was dealt. I see in the things I have kept the past that I can't let go of yet. I never wanted what I couldn't have. I only needed what I already had. I have been coping all so very long. I kept it right, so why's it kept me wrong?
Okay, that was Declan's sixth song of season 18. That was Kept Me Wrong. Huge fan of this. I love it. I know that you... I'll get ahead of the curve here. I know that you're not the keenest on this one, but it's just melodically so lovely and finger-picked, and I'm a big fan. What are your thoughts, and how did it come about?
My thoughts can be summed up with the vocalization of...
So I'm hearing, like, angry, frustrated something?
That's a podcast title, almost. Like, if we can work out how to spell that noise.
Okay, that's the title for sure. We'll have to figure it out.
So, as I intimated before, this song was written very last minute. I'll be honest right out of the gate. I have quite a low opinion of this song. Melodically, it uses a few basic tricks to sort of keep momentum going for the course of about 2 and a bit minutes. So it is a finger-picked pattern based around a F shape, which then goes to a B-flat major 7 sort of shape. It's got most of the notes of a B-flat major 7 in there, which gives it a little, like, nice texture. That's fair. It allows you to hang your melody on the A note, which is shared between those two chords, and give a little vocal inflection with the that bit in the verse. The chorus is just finger-picked stuff. It's hammering on C to a D on the notes F, A minor, and B-flat major 7 sus 2.
Ooh.
So in practical terms, it's 1 on the A. It is 3 on the D. It is 2 on the G. And 1 on the B. So it's almost like a F over B-flat. But just it gives that sort of... with its relative place in the movement.
Nice, yeah.
It gives a sense of progression without actually going anywhere.
I think that's lovely. I think... one thing that stands out to me about this song is that it doesn't ever, because it, I don't know, how do I put this? It's like a ballad and it's finger picks and everything, but it never seems to let up in terms of giving you new melodies and new information in terms of rhythm and lyric and that sort of thing. What I like is when it goes into the chorus, it kind of goes from almost a half, not a half time, but like it picks up and starts playing these eighth finger pick notes, and then the vocal picks up that rhythm as well, which is a really nice touch.
The reason the vocal does the same thing as the finger picking in the chorus is because I couldn't think of a better melody. it wasn't necessarily meant to be that way. It was originally meant to be eighth notes in the verse as well, but it was just a little awkward to finger pick. I could do it, but it just didn't come out well most of the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas doing it on the four and then the melody notes on the upbeat sort of made that a bit easier to play. The only other melodic information that was new was in the bridge, which does actually have a nice sort of A minor to C minor to B flat in there.
Nice.
That's a bit of fun. I enjoyed that. Then A minor, G minor, F, just to sort of bring it back down to the root. So structurally, there's nothing really wrong with it, but I also feel there's nothing really that exciting about it. It doesn't really develop in my eyes. And the vocal melody is basically cribbed from what the guitar is playing. It's, I think we call it the Black Sabbath trick sometimes, of like when everything is playing the same thing together. Like in Iron Man, everything is playing to that like riff. Even the drums are kind of playing to that riff to a degree. And I think you need a stronger voice than mine to pull that off, or a voice that's got a very particular character. I don't necessarily think my voice works for this song. But a big reason I really don't like this song is just the words. They're nothing. The first couple of lines, I haven't got the words, I need more time.
That I said to you, that's just you struggling to write a song on a Sunday, right?
It is, yes. this is not unknown. that's about the long and the short of it, and then it just goes into sort of generic sort of unhappy stuff, if that makes sense, like feeling a bit down, feeling like you know, you're the last pick, or feeling like you're the, I don't know, just those small feelings you get sometimes where you feel like you're in a bit of an oppressive world. And that's fine. There are some great songs written around that. There is a reason that songs like that have endured and are popular, but it doesn't really go anywhere. Again, melodically, it doesn't really go anywhere. Lyrically, it doesn't really go anywhere. You and I both like writing songs where we can, where there is some development over time, where even if it's not within the story of the song, or even if the lyrics don't change, then the music will change or something like that. Or we like twisting choruses. So they've got most of the same words, but a few are changed to impact differently. This song has none of that. It's just like, okay, I tried my best, didn't work. That's it. That's the song.
I mean, when you put it like that, I can see why it's not that favoured by you, in that it, because we like to kind of, like you say, when we can, write a song that starts here and maybe ends up at the end in a different place, like say musically, lyrically, or something, or there's been some kind of character arc or musical arc. But I think there's also an argument to be made, or a case to be made, for a song like this one, which, for anyone who can't tell, I genuinely really do love this song.
Then you're a fool!
well, I mean, I really like it. And I think there's a case to be made for a song that just is like a little snapshot. So I think you said something like, you're trying your best, but it didn't work out. And it doesn't really go anywhere. But that feeling is like that, isn't it? It's like, oh, for fuck's sake, I'm stuck in this feeling and there.
But I also think that's not really something that the way I sing and the way I perform and the way my voice sounds, I'm not convinced that's something that this is best for. It's hardly a lively voice, shall we say, but it is used to giving a bit more energy and giving a bit more character to certain readings of lines. It is used to sort of being used to a bit more volume, to sort of project emotionally, whether into a room or into the microphone. This kind of low energy, it's not a crooner song, but it's kind of, it's that sort of mumble folky kind of sad boy with his guitar kind of thing. I don't necessarily think that's a strong suit for me personally. Like, I think if you had a really talented singer, they might be able to get something special out of the bare bones. But you would need to be a talented singer, and that is, or like a singer with a particular voice which resonates nicely against like a guitar backing or something like that. And I just don't think that's quite my skill set.
I hear you. I do. However, okay, and this is the last time I'm going to play Devil's Advocate, I swear to God, because I'm probably annoying. But I think it works great for your voice. And everybody, email in and tell Declan how great this song and performance is, because I really do think so. And I think also, I think some songs like this, particularly very reflective sounding songs like this or emotional songs, they're usually best sung by the person who wrote them, because there's a certain something, a certain delivery that only you can do. And it reminds me of the track that is the opening track on our Schnookums album, our collaborative album, Early Riser, because that's a very finger-picked, very close-to-the-mic type of song. And that, in my opinion, is a really great song.
Breakfast, shower, clothes and news. With extra hours, what to do? Taking time just to think things through. Things he wants to, things he needs.
See, I like Early Riser. That's why it's on the Schnookums album. But I think the thing with that one, why I'm okay with that, is that it does develop. It's got a few more interesting chord ideas in there. Being a recording, we were able to put a couple of things like the piano on there. We had you doing harmonies like across the room to get like a really unique vocal quality.
Oh, yeah.
For example, the chorus, this one, I end up singing, and I apologize for the balance in the audio, but I end up singing for this one, something like, I never wanted what I couldn't have. which around that sort of volume, which it it's not really there. Whereas with early risers, can I wait to, like, it feels like it's using more of my power range, as it were.
Yeah.
Like, it moves more. It's got more of a dynamic shift to it.
No, that makes sense. That just makes sense. All I'll say is, when it comes time for us to choose the tracks for our next album, I'm going to be really hounding you to try and get this on the album somehow. So
if you sing it, maybe.
I would just love it to be produced. So I'll sing it if you want me to sing it. But let me ask you a question about the name of the song. So you got Kept Me Wrong. So I'm not going to try and paraphrase, because I'm terrible at paraphrasing things. I tried to keep it right, but it kept me wrong. What does that mean, and where did that lyric come from?
That's just life. That's like, I've done my best and I've still failed.
So you tried to keep the pieces of your life in good shape, is it, or...?
I don't know. It was just words I wrote very quickly. Let me just have a quick look and see. Oh, I have to refer to my notes. This is embarrassing.
Well, sometimes it's not like some huge meaning behind something, but it sounds like there's a big meaning behind something. Like, you know.
It's kind of a weird chorus when I look at it, written down. Because the first two bits kind of feel hopeful in that I never needed what I couldn't have. So I never wanted what I couldn't have, I only needed what I already had. Bit of a weak rhyme, but that feels like more of a standard Declan lyric of like, yeah, it sucks, but it's fun to be in a sucky situation together. Wow, that is some introspection I'm doing right now. I've been coping for oh so very long. I've kept it right, so why has it kept me wrong? It's just life. It's just general decisions. It's just the things that go on. Mm. It rhymed. That could be a title. It rhymed.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, some lyrics are just like, it was the lyric that worked. You know, it kind of reminds
me... One thing I do like lyrically, sorry, I've just spotted it here.
Yeah.
There's the, on the B flat section in the first verse, there's, I think I'm losing track of myself, which, you know, bit of a generic line, but okay. But then I call back to it in verse two. I think I'm losing track. I said before.
It's like you're losing your memory too.
That's the one bit I like in that song lyrically. That's the one bit I would keep.
It's going to be a short song if you only keep that part though.
I just think it's structurally very funny.
Oh, that's really cool. One other question about the bridge. You said you go to some non-diatonic chords there, which make for a really nice tonal shift. I'm always curious about this. When you decided to go for a non-diatonic chord there, did you already have something in place that was diatonic, and then you thought, oh, I'm going to be a bit clever here and put something non-diatonic in, or was it just kind of like, how do you come to that decision to put something that doesn't ordinarily fit?
It's just searching for the right chord, what sounds right. Like, I'm sure you and I have had situations where you run a chord sequence through and you put a different chord at the end of it each time.
Yeah.
You never seem to quite get there. The only non-diatonic chord really is that C minor, which is a minor fifth. But I knew that that melody had to go do 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 do, which is a C to an E flat to a D. Apologies. So it was trying to find every chord that had a C minor in it that would kind of reasonably fit. And I'm glad I didn't get to the point where I'm sure you and I have done where, like, you run through all the standard chords that have a certain note and it's like, right, okay, time to break out the jazz chords. Here we go.
Yeah.
Let's get some suspensions going on. Let's augment notes. Let's replace them. Let's diminish them.
Yeah, I definitely have been there a lot of times. Yeah, it's just interesting because I think sometimes for me, like, if I've got a section that goes E, A, B, for example, part of me goes, oh, I've done that so many times, it's quite obvious that'll happen.
There's a little voice that's just like, you could put something better in there, couldn't
you?
Yeah,
what about E, F sharp minor B or E, A, B minor? Because then you've got the fifth minor. Yeah, you want to be clever sometimes.
Or like, can you hold a note through that? No, I can't. Weird voice in my brain. How dare you?
I don't want to hold the note. Get away from me. stupid voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Who gave you permission to speak? You did. Oh.
I'm always like this when I'm songwriting. I've always got a little hand up here. And he's always saying stuff.
If any of the audio listeners want to see us try and do like puppet shows for a second.
And if I don't use the diminished chord, he pecks me in the head.
He's very rude. That's about as much as I can think to say on this one. I will just highlight that my not liking it is more of a personal thing with relation to the knowledge of my technical abilities, more than anything else. Like, I'm annoyed that this is a Declan song, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. However, I absolutely love it. And if it getting on a Shnookums album means a different vocalist, I will happily be that different vocalist if you want me to be.
Fantastic. I would love that. However, can we see if Adele's free? See if she can work her magic on it?
Yeah, Adele would be really good at actually.
Get a little feature.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's email Adele.
So, moving on, let's listen to your song, Roger. So what have you presented for us this week? Would you care to explain what we have here?
Come up to the front and show the class.
Don't be shy.
This song is called Out of the Fire, and it started with a lyric, and it goes like this.
Into the frying pan. I guess I never really understood. If she's a liar, then I'm a foolish man, incapable of doing any good. I would tell you that my hands are tied, but you already know the score. You remind me that the greatest things can come from anywhere at all. Fire, don't wanna leave so soon, but I've done nearly everything I can. I'm getting tired, it's been a long, long year. I can't believe you say it's only June. I would tell you that my hands are tied, but you already know the score. You remind me that the greatest things can come at any time.
So that was Roger's sixth song, Out of the Fire. And I must say, I had to get out of the fire and dance to that one. No, that was terrible. we're keeping this take, but that was a terrible one.
But do you come I up really with them on the spot?
I wasn't planning.
It's good. It's spontaneous.
I'm normally better than that. But that was the song. And we really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. So, Roger, where does it come from? What have you done here? What have you made?
What have you done here?
What have you done?
I said before the lyric came first, the out of the fire into the frying pan, but that was a lie. It was a dirty lie. So, actually what happened first was the melody came to me first. Dum 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 da dum. I had just finished work one evening and I put some pasta on to boil. And while the pasta was boiling, I was just kind of singing this little melody to myself and just playing it on loop. And sometimes when I do that and I'm just kind of doing other things around the house, cleaning or whatever, I go, that's a good enough melody to recording to my phone, so I did. And I was thinking, that's the foundation. So then I found the chords that go with it. Quite sort of standard chords. What are we doing? We're going C, D, G, E minor, E minor, D, G. And then to get round to loop it again, to get back up to the C, I was going to go G7, but I replaced the G7 with an F, which, you know, obviously there's an F in G7, but to use a whole F, I hadn't done that before, I don't think.
Little cheeky little flat 7 major there.
That's it.
It's one of those songs, it sound, when you sort of say the chords out loud, it sounds relatively simple, but like you've put a lot of texture into this one. And like that's a really cool riff to sort of base the whole thing around. Like I notice there's a bit of a 60s pop fart going on with this one, or is this just something I'm manifesting?
I think you're half manifesting and half it's already an embryo of that. I think that's the direction to go, because when we listened to the demo a minute ago, you were saying about having like a real 60s organ, overdriven 60s bass and stuff, and I think that's the direction to go with it. I mean, I had been listening to a lot of Harry Nilsson, I think, the week I wrote it, so it probably came out like that.
Lost every race I ever ran. I never even got a start. People tell you now one thing.
I can sort of see that. It doesn't sound like Harry Nilsson, but I can sort of see where you would approach from that general direction. So that's a great opening line. Is that kind of what inspired the lyric, or was it something else? Like, did it just come to you, or was it like a process of like working through something to get there?
Well, I mean, you were saying about your song that the lyrics were kind of, you felt, a weak point. It was sort of similar for me with this one, where I came up with that lyric, and I've said this pretty much every episode of this season, haven't I? Just like, what does that mean? Out of the fire into the frying pan. Obviously, it's a flip on out of the frying pan into the fire. And I thought, there's something to that. And I think it was basically like...
It's another one of your saying songs.
Yeah, I've got a lot of those, haven't I?
That's your next EP, saying songs.
Ooh, saying songs. It just sounds like that should be a Patrick Stewart thing where I just say popular songs in a narration voice, you know? My papa, papa, poker face, papa, poker face.
You mean like a William Shatner thing rather than a Patrick Stewart thing?
yeah, William Shatner, yeah. Who's Patrick Stewart?
Next Generation.
Oh, I'm one of the First Generation. Damn. So I came up with that lyric, and it was like trying to fit that. And it's really just a kind of like fictionalized thing. It's like just trying to find lyrics to fit to that lyric and that melody. And it was like, out of the fire into the frying pan. I guess I never really understood. That doesn't really mean anything. It just kind of rhymes quite well. And then if she's a liar, which rhymes with for the keen-eared amongst you, out of the fire. And if she's a liar, then I'm a foolish man. Incapable of doing any good. So it just kind of paints a bit of a vague picture of like, I guess he must have had a breakup or something like that, which I haven't, but it just kind of, I don't know, it's a vague lyric which kind of rhymes and sounds good, so no real depth.
Confirmed, Roger hasn't had a breakup, therefore Roger not single. No, I'm joking, of course. but I like the internal rhyming on that one there.
Thank you.
Like, it's not something here too much often, but like you've managed to make all of the key syllables like rhyme again, as opposed to just the end ones. Again, conscious choice, or is that just like the way it sort of most naturally seemed to go?
I think I've gotten into a bit of a good habit over the past couple of years of, because I listen to a lot of rap as well, as you know, and I think because there's a lot of internal rhymes and syllable play, and like that's kind of a huge thing in hip-hop, I think it's just kind of rubbed off of me where I can't really write a lyric anymore. I'm incapable of writing a lyric that doesn't kind of...
Like, I mean, 166 episodes of this show would like would disagree with you there. Can't write lyrics, Mike.
No, I mean, I can't write a lyric that doesn't like have like some alliteration at least, and then the punchline rhyme thing. I mean, I guess I have. I mean, I'm sure someone will find one or something. But anyway, I just like them. I like those internal rhyme things, and it kind of adds a bit more rhythm, you know. If da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's just kind of like, it's as well as the chords, it's something else that pulls you along, pulls the listener along, and it provides a bit more interest, I suppose.
In a practical sense, it's also much easier to sort of remember words to sing them live that way. Like a lot of, I'm terrible for remembering my lyrics, but if I know that like of the, if there are like six rhyming syllables and I know five of them, I can probably guess by context what the missing word is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that is actually a thing with writing too. I don't know if you have this where, because I know that the last lines of A and B need to rhyme, of lines A and B need to rhyme, and then the middle rhymes too, then sometimes it is just a case of like incapable, like 1, 2, 3, 4. I know that there needs to be a four syllable there, so I know that there needs to be a four syllable on the next one. So what I'm saying is like it makes lyric writing easier in a sense because you go, it's just filling in the gaps of like what needs to kind of fill up the lines.
It's easier and harder sometimes, isn't it? Because I've had the thing where like you write line one, it suggests something. You know what the conclusion is going to be for line two. You know how it's probably going to end. Like, for example, on this day. And it's just working out the is to try and make it not sound incredibly clunky or forced or get it.
Exactly. I mean, like to really get granular with it, like lyric writing. And this one was a good example of this. I had the melody. I had the so you have all the syllables already there, but they're like blank spaces, you know? So it's just a case of sitting with the guitar. Like I said, I had the chords and you just kind of loop it round and you go out of the fire into the frying pan. Z-o-de-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And it's like you just say a thing and then you say it again and it's like z-o-de-do-do-do-do-do-do. And you go, I guess that kind of sounds like I never really understood. And that does fit. So, okay, that's the lyric. It's like it's a weird way of doing it. But
yeah, you just kind of got to get used to the fact that you are just going to sound just a wee bit funny for a few minutes as you try and like vocalize it out.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like kind of like I've said before, like because I draw, like it's kind of like sketching with a pencil. You do lots of lines that are kind of vague and soft until you look and you go, okay, that looks like there's actually a line I could do with pen there. Does that make any sense? But that's how it feels.
It does, yeah. You're sort of like feeling out the boundaries of where the lyrics lie. I suppose we've both had a little bit of more experience of this on this week where we've sort of said we've written a few more just wholly fictitious songs. But it's that sort of when you're not dealing with your own emotions, you're also trying to get like a narrative through line. And like a process like that does help in terms of like narrowing your avenues and trying to work out, okay, this is the way the song seems to be taking me. How do we navigate that one and make it interesting?
Yeah.
Which, was that something you found on this one?
A good point. I mean, with this one, narratively, not so much. I think it was just kind of like a case of, because I think out of the two of us, I think you're more geared towards, okay, this has happened in verse one and two, perhaps. So something needs to happen in verse three, which kind of resolves or addresses something that happens or that needs to be a change. Whereas broadly speaking, I think I'm more like, I want to paint a vague picture of what this emotion or situation is without maybe describing everything. Would you say that's fair?
I think that's a fair generalization. Yes, I think it's that's definitely where we tend to fall into between the two of us. But obviously, we do mix and match. We don't just write the same song every week. Destroy the evidence in editing.
He's bad mouthing you.
Quiet, you.
But I mean, as far as like the narrative thing, I mean, I've got to remember what verse two is now. So yeah, with verse two, it's like out of the fire, don't want to leave so soon, but I've done nearly everything I can. I'm getting tired. It's been a long, long year. I can't believe you say it's only June. So again, not really saying much descriptively, but it rhymes and it has some of those internal rhymes. And it starts with out of the fire again, which I think kind of followed on from the chorus, because the chorus ends in like, you remind me that the greatest things can come from anywhere at all. And then it kind of goes, like, out of the fire. It's kind of implied in my head, at least.
But it's kind of also a nice narrative link between the two verses that you end up in different spaces. And it's also quite a nice wham line, like, it's been a year, I can't believe you only say it's June or something like that.
Yeah. Like, that was one where I...
Everyone at the moment, it seems like in my life, I can't go one day without someone saying, like, oh my goodness, where did the first 4 months go? It's like, stop saying that, you're manifesting it even more.
I mean, like,
it'll be a bit October before we know it.
That's like one element of like the song, I suppose, is true. Like a kernel of truth is like, it does feel like it should be December by now. Like nothing crazy's happened, really. I mean, I suppose, in a way. But anyway, like, sometimes you have such a packed year, you go, oh my God, I'm exhausted. It's only June? It's not only June. Right now it is, what, April?
April.
So, but that doesn't rhyme with the previous lyric. So that's the thing. We've said before on the show, like, sometimes you've got to fictionalize things, haven't you?
Indeed. And you'll be penalized one songwriting point for using the wrong month and not coming up with a different rhyme. How dare you? And yes, I am keeping score.
Oh, God.
I'm on 10 million and you're on 46.
I mean, nothing rhymes with April.
Sorry, 45.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. What rhymes with April, though? Grapril?
Fateful?
Oh, with artistic license, I suppose.
Yeah. You'd only be docked half a point for that one.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I will admit, actually, when I'm writing songs, I'm actually a bit ashamed to admit this, but here we go. This is, you know, AA or something. I'm very ashamed to say
that
sometimes I use rhymezone.com or a rhyming dictionary or thesaurus.com.
It's a tool. It's there to be used. Like, it's probably better than me going, like, what rhymes with day, away, say, pray. Those are the only words that rhyme with way.
They're limited. When I was younger, I used to do this thing where I would write the alphabet at the bottom of my lyric page, and I just kind of like use that as a little reference, and I go, okay, I don't know, bring, bing, king, ling, ding, ing, fing, ging, until I found a word I liked. I go, okay, I'll use that one.
I mean, that's a way to break a stalemate, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But I think the only other thing I really wanted to say about the song was that, you know, I said in the chord progression I used an F to rise back up to the C. And obviously the F is the non-diatonic chord in that sequence. And I liked that movement. It kind of gave it a little bit of a weird bump in the song that I quite liked. So I thought, when I get to the chorus, I don't know what the chorus is yet, but I'm going to try and incorporate the F major into the song, which is in G. So it's just a simple loop that goes around, and it goes F, C, G, D. And it just goes round and round like that until it gets back into the verse. But starting on the non-diatonic chord just kind of gives it a bit of a weird oomph in the chorus, I think.
But that links up quite nicely, like having those four chords go around that way, because you've got your dominant tonic flattened below what they should be, dominant tonic again, but then your D and your F. Like, it's that lovely, it's that very 70s, like, flattened major third. Basically, they're three semitones apart, and that's like a really cool, they're linked in terms of like the minor chords, but you see it all the time in 70s rock songs where they'll go, for example, E, G, A, and it still works because those chords are kind of linked through other chords. So yeah, it's quite a nice, like you say, it's a nice sort of loop.
Yeah, it is. And I love that kind of thing in 70s songs. In fact, last night, my dad and I, we were listening to like shuffle, like rock music shuffle on the speaker. And
I thought you were going to say you've discovered a new artist or something. Like, this new band, Shuffle, they're really good.
You gotta listen to their...
Bit varied, but you know.
Their first album's amazing, but their second album, they went all synth rock. But you know that Bad Company song, Feel Like Making Love?
Yes.
Which is a really cool song, actually, quite like straightforward. But what I like about that is, to my ear at least, I didn't figure it out on guitar or anything, the verses seem to be very major chordy, diatonic major chord, and then when it gets to that feel like making, you're automatically introducing that, if it's in G, it would be the F, where you kind of get and that kind of minor chord borrowing thing.
Well, that song goes between a D and a G normally, so it's implying that it's going to have an A in there somewhere.
Ah.
Which is where that chorus riff is a C to a D. So again, it's that flat seven thing. Like the ba-dum, boom, ba-dum, boom. Also, it's a very cool song. And I did not annoy my family trying to learn that riff at all when I was a teenager. Not once, not never, not ISA.
Didn't happen. Oh, that's so cool, though. Just like that little that's what I'm saying, that little shift into like a borrowed chord can just do wonders, I think. But anyway.
Yeah. What's it you call it? Ear candy. It's just a little something to perk up a otherwise functional chord progression, or like a otherwise diatonic chord progression.
Okay, and now on to our regular item. What have you been listening to, Ian? The item in which Declan, Roger, and Ian all talk about what they've been listening to in the past week and what's piqued their interest as a music listener.
And I've actually got a message here from Ian.
Oh, good.
He writes, "Why do you keep messaging me? We met once 10 years ago. Stop making this weird."
Rude.
So he's been a bit inconclusive about what he's been listening to this week. We'll try him again next week, see what he's like.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at least he's still responding. He hasn't changed his number again.
Yeah, that was a bit of a terrible week, wasn't it?
Dark days. Well, anyway, in the absence of Ian, what have you been listening to, Declan?
Music.
All right, join us again next week on the Weekly Song Podcast.
It's a terrible joke and I make it all the time. First one is Bombay Bicycle Club, My Big Day.
What did you make of that?
I quite enjoyed it. Look, he's got fried eggs on his face.
He's having a laugh.
Bombay Bicycle Club are one of those bands where I really love a few songs and I can sort of just put the rest on and enjoy it, but don't really form strong opinions, if that makes sense. Mm. So I like one or two things on that quite a bit, but most of it is fine, but a good fine. James Blake, Assume Form. There is a very good track on here with Andre 3000.
Oh, sweet. Does Andre 3000 rap or play flute?
He does not play flute. He does rap.
You say that as if I'm out of anywhere. You only had a flute album out recently.
I do. I listen to most of it. we have got Labyrinth, Electronic Earth.
Oh, wow.
There is electricity involved in the playing this album, but there was no compost or dirt or soil or anything like that. False advertising, 0 out of 1.
I hate false advertising.
I'm just going to have to double-check the title of this album, because I think I know what it is, but for some reason my version has the cover in Spanish.
Come on, give us a spout of your Spanish.
Oh, I know none. Maradis speech Speci? It's 2 C's. But it is the choral Sea of Mirrors. For some reason, they did a limited signed version with sort of a fake Western-style poster, and it was cheaper than the normal version, so that's why I've got it.
Ah, sick. I like that alternate cover. It's nice.
It's fun. Angel Olsen, Big Time. Some country vibes. Quite nice. Corinne Bailey Rae, Black Rainbows.
Oh, that was kind of a comeback album, wasn't it?
Yeah, you would not think this is the same person who did Girl Put Your Records On. But yeah, there's some great stuff on this one. Erasure I quite liked, and New York Transit Queen as well.
So what's the change in style then? Like you said, it's not kind of what you'd expect.
Bit more rock, bit more... Like, there's a bit more of a very tone, but like it feels very much like... I'm trying to think of the best way to say it. There's a lot more guitars, there's a lot more use of weird studio effects. It still has a couple of pop moments, but it's like it's not like an old style pop record for her. Give it a listen, I think you might like it.
Oh, sick. Okay, I will. Sounds good.
Cathode Ray Tube, Super Cassette. This is not the album I was supposed to have.
Oh, really?
I ordered a CD from their Bandcamp and they sent me the wrong one. But I've got the download of the one I wanted, so I've got that, so that's fun.
So you kind of got two albums for the price of one, then?
I know, don't tell them. McKinley Dixon, Beloved, Paradise, Jazz? That's quite good. Listen to the tracks Run, Run, Run and Beloved, Paradise, Jazz, if you want to get a feel for that.
Nice.
Soccer Mommy, Sometimes Forever.
Sweet.
That's quite good. I enjoyed it. No strong feelings.
No strong feelings one way or the other.
Avril Lavigne, Let It Go, because I never listened to this in the past. Which is, there's a big black hole where my heart used to be. No, sorry. just where there's a certain era of music which just vanished into it. This is one of the albums that did. Singles are strong. and I generally enjoyed the rest of it, but like, again, it's a singles game.
It's a singles album, yeah. My sister and I were big Avril Lavigne fans at one point, and we actually saw her live, and that album's got a special place in my heart, but mostly the singles in my heart.
There are some albums where even if you like them, you know it's a singles game.
Yeah.
Lower Than Atlantis, Safe in Sound. I bought this because I quite liked the first track, Had Enough. And the rest of the album is fine, but Had Enough is the standout.
You could say you had enough after track one.
Lauren Morrow, People Talk, sort of a country-tinged album from last year, which I quite enjoyed. The song Hustle has been one that I've played quite a bit. Listen to that song. I really enjoy it. H-U-S-T-L-E, you gotta hustle, baby, just like me.
Sorry. I think I've heard that. That's been on the radio a little bit, I think.
I've played it in the car whilst you've been in there.
That's it. Radio Declan. I knew it was
Radio Declan.
Coming to you live. Radio Declan. D-E-C-L-A-N.
And then that's it. That's my pile of CDs, all carefully arranged and not at all wildly flung onto the bed.
Nice. A really good mix there. I think out of all those ones, the one I'm going to check out first is the Corin Bailey Rae new one. That's really piqued my interest.
It's about 35 minutes long, so it shouldn't take you that long to get through it.
About 35 minutes, I would have thought.
About 35 minutes, yeah. What about yourself? What music have you been putting into your ear holes for your brain to enjoy?
Well, you asked that, and yet again, it's one of those things where I've been quite obsessive about an album or two. I know one I definitely want to talk to you about. Well, actually, first of all, I'll talk about the new Lemon Twig singles. Oh, the new Lemon Twig singles. They got an album coming out in a month or so, and there's a fantastic song called How Could I Love Her More, which came out last week, which I've just had on absolute repeat. Really good. But they're one of those bands where they constantly set the bar higher and higher and higher. And again, one of those bands where you just kind of listen to them and you go like, it's either going to spur you on to keep improving as a writer, or it's just going to put you off forever, you know?
Yeah, when you find artists like that for yourself, it's a double-edged sword.
yeah, absolutely. But I just think they're so inspiring. They're very kind of Beatles, Beach Boys. They're really leaning into the 60s thing this time around. But obviously the album's not out, yeah, so I don't really have too many deep thoughts on that. But I've also been listening to a 1980... Actually, let me just check the year of this. It's a Todd Rundgren album called Nearly Human. And I think it's 89, yeah. So a lot of the Todd Rundgren albums I've listened to have been the 70s ones, you know, like Something Anything with the big singles I Saw the Light and that sort of thing. And I've been venturing into the 80s stuff, which is actually really good. This Nearly Human album has some of his best songwriting on it, and it sounds like a lot of it was written at the piano or the keyboard, but then it's produced in a very 80s way. So if you're not a fan of 80s production, which I'm not really, with the synths and the FM synths and the do-do-do-do-do, then you might not be a fan of it. But if you can see through the production, I think it's really, really good, songwriting-wise particularly.
It's always that struggle with 80s bands where, like, that started off in the 70s or the 60s, where, like, you can tell that enough thought is being put into it, and like you know, they clearly know what they're doing, but there is just something about the way everybody went so headlong heavy into the 80s sound that is kind of off-putting in some aspects. By the end of the 80s, you tend to get a lot of bands like finding that balance a bit more. So is that the case with Todd Rundgren, like, compared to like his other 80s stuff?
In a way I think the most 80s thing he did was in 85 is an album called Acapella, where he just, everything on the album is his voice, and he either sang it or he sang a, you know, a beatbox into a synthesizer and then played it like as a sampler. And that was very 80s. Some good songs on it, but it was very much like the production was shining more than the actual songs. Whereas with Nearly Human, the songwriting is definitely there. But I know exactly what you mean. It's like sometimes great 60s or 70s bands, like, they, it's almost like they thought, well, the technology's evolving, so in order for us to keep evolving, we'll keep writing good, but we'll lean into that technology. Whereas that technology just colours everything so much, you know.
It's a very heavy sort of sound to go for. If you go for it all the way, it's just going to sound like itself, essentially. Like, it's definitely... That decade, more than any particularly, I think, has a sonic signature all of its own, just due to the technology that was created to sort of produce popular music. It does end up risking an artist not sounding like themselves, or like not enough of their personality being able to shine through. There are bands that can use that to their advantage, and there are bands that can overcome it. But then I suppose that's the same when you look at any genre of music and any sort of decade of music production.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think sometimes we, even as musicians or whatever, we underestimate how much of an artist's sound is their production. Like, you look at somebody like, I don't know, Ray Charles, for example, is a pretty good, like, simple example, where his sound is like electric Rhodes piano or organ with live horns and live backup vocalists and a double bass and a drum kit. And if you get to the 80s and he starts producing like, hey, we don't need horn players anymore, we'll save that budget and we'll get a Yamaha DX7 synthesizer and play the brass on that, you've already completely rejigged the DNA of what Ray Charles is.
The reason it probably affects artists of previous eras more is that to get sounds like that, you would have got session musicians in who all have their own unique way of playing, who have their unique rapport with the artists and things like that. So once you just get it to sort of being a button you can press for a consistent uniform sound, that sort of removes a fair bit of personality or potential personality from a lot of the records. It takes a sort of skillful producer and skillful musicians to kind of either circumvent or embrace that.
Definitely. But then even like with great musicians like Todd Rundgren and like Frank Zappa, he did a lot of stuff with this thing called the synclavier in the late 80s, where he was able to realize his orchestral compositions with this one shitty sounding keyboard. And like, it's cool in a way, because like with the Todd Rundgren record, like you go like, it's amazing that he was able to do that. And he's still, you can hear he's a great musician, but there's that thought like, I can't help but wish I could hear what it would sound like if it was produced in the old way, you know?
It's like the Freddie Mercury Montserrat Caballé album, Barcelona.
Mm.
Like, that was recorded with a synth orchestra. They've done a version of it now with a real-life orchestra, and obviously because it's done so many years after the fact to archive recordings and things, it's never going to quite be 100%, but you just think, man, if they'd done that at the time, particularly for, because obviously Montserrat Caballé is a opera singer, like you get her performing behind like a real orchestra or something, and then you have like the greatest pop rock singer in the world next to her, like who's used to just projecting anyway to whoever. And you just wonder how that would have changed that record. Because I love the Barcelona record, but there is a little shadowy part of my mind that wonders what it would have sounded like had they gone for an orchestra at the time.
Yeah, because it probably would have changed the whole performance too. I guess that's what you're saying, really, is that like, if they had the orchestra and they recorded particularly live in one session, the energy would have been amazing.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I'm just sad I'm not living in this parallel reality now.
It's like one of those questions as well, like you think like, oh, if the Beatles had gotten back together in the 80s and John Lennon had lived through the 80s, what if they'd made another record, and would that have been a good thing, or would they have suffered from the 80s syndrome as well?
The one that sort of is always going to cause me to think is Elton John was not the first choice to do the music for The Lion King. The first choice was Benny and Bjorn from ABBA. Now, I love Elton John, and The Lion King is one of my favourite movies of all time. Yes, I am a child. But I can't help but wonder what the ABBA version of The Lion King would sound like. We are living in the wrong universe.
I want to hear that too. Man, they're great.
Knowing me, knowing Scar, look out, Mufasa.
Okay, it's now your life's work to write that musical, okay?
Oh, let's give it some time.
No, you got to start now, because it's going to take you a while.
Hakuna Matata, here we go again, my, my.
You've thought about this before, I can tell.
So that's it for this episode of the Weekly Song Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you've got any thoughts about anything we've discussed in this episode, if you've written a song that you'd like to send in to us, if you just fancy typing words into the internet, then why not write to us at weeklysongpodcast@gmail.com. You can find the Weekly Song Podcast on Instagram, on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. We have one of those. Aren't we doing well? If you've just been listening to the audio version of the podcast throughout this season, we now have a video version on YouTube. Just search the Weekly Song Podcast and you can see what we look like and see all the silly things that we've been doing on camera. Roger and I have a band together called Schnookums, S-C-H-N-O-O-K-U-M-S. I'm doing that a bit slower because I have to edit that every single time and I'm a bit tired of having to go S-C-H-N-O-O-K-U-M-S.
Nailed it.
Yeah, but yeah, you can find that on all the fun places where you normally find music. Give it a listen. We have fun, as you can tell from us discussing it earlier in the podcast. Roger, whereabouts is your music in this weird space that we call the interwebs?
Well, it is. I could play an old prospector like this. Anyway, it is the usual places: Bandcamp, Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, Tidal, YouTube. Did I say Bandcamp? Still Bandcamp. Bandcamp Christ, because it's the best one.
Bandcamp, 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 Bandcamp.
It is the best one, really. There, and also Instagram at Roger Heathers. And do check out our album Attaboy, as Declan mentioned. That's our band Schnookums, S-C-H-N-O-O-K-U-M-S. And you can listen to our album there. I write a weekly blog, which actually I missed last week. So for anyone who reads it, I'm sorry about that, but it'll be out next week. And that's pretty much it. How about yourself, Declan? Where can people find you and your plethora of released music?
You can find me behind you. No, you can't. That'd be really weird. I'm not behind you. you can find my album and couple of EPs by searching Declan Kitchener into your preferred music streaming service. Also Bandcamp if you feel like paying money. I don't blame you if you don't. You can also find me on YouTube. There's a few video covers of things on there from a couple of years ago now. I do not have a Substack. I do not write a thoughtful note every week displaying part of my writing process because I'm a terrible person. I've decided just to own the fact now. That's about it for me, really. Thank you very much for listening this week. We'll see you again with the final songwriting episode of the season, which normally we would be saying how terrified we are to do the writing, but because we're recording one week in advance now, we've actually done it. We've both got songs. We both know we finished.
We're confident. We've got two fantastic... No, I'm joking. I can't remember what my song is like, but I haven't heard yours yet.
It's deleted itself! No!
That'll teach you to store your songs on your mobile phone.
Yes, it will!
So we got seventh song. And then we're going to do an eighth episode for those of you who are interested in eighth editions of things, where we're going to discuss five albums that changed our lives or something.
Five albums that we kind of think impacted our songwriting and what we appreciate about them. And also just they'll probably be good albums, most likely. I'm wondering if I can fit a deliberately bad album onto my list just as a warning of what not to do.
Yeah, like the Shags or something.
I've never actually listened to that album.
Oh, well.
I don't really intend to.
It's worth it, in a way. That's my review of it. Anyway, we're rambling. Ta-ra, everyone. Thank you.
So, the Shags is going to be numbers 1 to 5 on Roger's
list. Oh, my gosh. Ta-ra.
Ta-ra.